Welcome to our session of Black Caucus of Health Workers. And we have three presentations today. We had one presentation that was canceled at the last minute because of a surgery. The presenter's mom was going to have surgery, and she could not make it, and she thought someone would come and present on her behalf, but that person hasn't shown up yet. So we're going to proceed as if they will not be here. But before I move on, since we do have a few minutes, I just want to make you aware of some handouts. On the back table, there is a handout for one of the presentations, so please feel free to take that. And there are also some handouts about a book, Toward Equity and Health. Okay, I'm being a little taken liberty. I have a chapter in this book, so it's not available to purchase here, but you can order it in the exhibit hall. It will be available in a few weeks. And this is about a conference that is titled Health Inequity. And there are also flyers about this on the back table. Okay, so at this time, it's just a few minutes past 4:30, and there are two presenters for this first session. And at the end of their presentation, we will spend about 5 minutes in Q&A, and we'll do that after each presenter. And hopefully they won't run over, and then at the end we'll still have more time for questions and dialogue. So I do not have full bios, and I just announced the book. I don't know if you wanted to take a minute to, we're not overstretched for time, so if you wanted to say anything more, you're welcome to do that.
Just that we have wonderful chapters by people like Dr. Rashid here. And that it was an outgrowth of the first annual Health Disparities Conference. The flyers are in the back. It'll be available in about 3 weeks. And in addition, we're having the third annual Health Disparities Conference at Teachers College in March, the 7th and 8th. Thank you very much.
Okay, so the first two presenters will be Ann Morris and Yang Lee, and they're master's candidates from the University of North Carolina School of Public Health, is that right? UNC School of Public Health. And so they will, I'm not sure who's going first, but they know. So that's what's most important.
Thank you very much. Again, we are master's candidates in the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at UNC School of Public Health. I'm Ann Morris, and this is Jung Lee, and we are joined by four of our teammates who also participated in the action-oriented community diagnosis, which we'll speak to you about. So if you ladies wouldn't mind just standing, Erin Alam Hansen, Jennifer Wieland, Ellie Morris, and Katie Keating. So we'll talk about the work that we did in two Eastern North Carolina communities. We've pseudonymed the names of the communities just in the interest of trying to maintain some privacy, so we'll refer to the two towns, as Queenstown and Ramsville. And we'll be speaking about their response to severe flooding following a hurricane in 1999 that caused severe damage to both towns.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming to our station. Use this one. Mm-hmm. This is our presentation overview. I will be talking about the learning objectives, background, method, and later on, and we'll talk about the result and the recommendations. The learning objectives. The purpose of our study is to explore the ways the African American communities of Queenstown and Ramsville responded to flooding after a hurricane, to understand the community's efforts to rebuild and to reclaim their identities, to consider the various health impacts of the flood, and to provide recommendations to the communities for ways to further improve the quality of life for African American in Rensselaer and Queenstown. The background of our study. The communities we are talking about here include two towns. Queenstown and Rensselaer, North Carolina, are located in eastern North Carolina and are separated by a river. The towns share a long history but maintain a separate identity. The county in which the Queenstown and Rensselaer are located is a large rural county. The Rensselaer has a rich agricultural history and is the county seat. Many residents of Queenstown trace their ancestry back to the town's founder following the Civil War. Queenstown's residents are predominantly African American, and African American counts for nearly 40% of Rensselaer's population. Based on per capita income, African Americans within this county are poorer on average than their state and national counterparts. The flood. In 1999, flooding following a severe hurricane destroyed both towns. The flood destroyed all of Queenstown and over 40% of Rensselaer. The flood had disproportionate impacts on African Americans in both towns, affecting the sense of community and identity that is so important in rural North Carolina. We'll address this later in the results section. Rebuilding. Despite the fact that 6,500 Queenstown and Rensselaer residents were displaced, residents received a great deal of support in the aftermath of the flood. Administered national press and visited by nationally prominent figures, Queenstown was faced with the option of to rebuild or to accept the buyout program from the federal government. The buyout program meant that the homeowners would receive a pre-flood market value for their homes but would never be able to rebuild on their own land. Because of the strong ancestral connection to the land, the Queenstown commissioners voted to rebuild their towns in its original location. For nearly 2 years after the flood, volunteers assisted in the gutting homes and other aspects of the rebuilding efforts. Today, more than 7 years later, the majority of homes have been rebuilt and the long-term revitalization efforts continue. There are currently plans in place to develop a museum in Queenstown and to improve the area's economy. Some residents now refer to the flood as a blessing for the towns. The method of our study. We used a community participatory research method called AOCD, an action-oriented community diagnosis. We conducted AOCD over a 7 month period, guided by two community preceptors who live and worked in the communities. The two preceptors facilitate our introduction to the community and provide assistance throughout our project. The purpose of an AOCD is to identify the community's strengths, resources, and challenges, and to develop the creative ways to approach the challenges. Throughout the project, it's a seven-month period. Our student team collected the data and worked to gain entry in the communities. Three types of qualitative data were collected: observational data, semi-structured interviews, and the secondary data sources. Secondary data included the historical archive and the technical documents. Data were analyzed using a transcript-based analysis approach to determine patterns of meaning related to community and identity. Here is our project timeline. We'll leave this chart for your later review. Interviewee characteristics. We interviewed 42 participants, including 24 community members and 18 service providers. Here is their race, age, and sex, and the residence distributions. We interviewed more people in Rensselaer than in Queenstown because more population in Rensselaer than another towns. And we interviewed white community members because we want to gain some outsiders' perspective on the African-American communities, on what is the challenge, what is the strength of the African-American. The white community members provide an outsider's view on those issues and the age. And our examples also present the different age group and the gender. Well, this chart, you can ask question if you are curious about the characteristic of our participant later. Now here, I will let Anne take over and talk about the result and recommendations.
Thank you, Zhang. And copies of our slides are available at the back if you have a chance to look at them and have questions about anything later on. The results.
Oops.
So the interviewing accounts did not suggest a substantial difference in initial responses to the flooding by county, state, or federal officials and agencies. However, when asked about the impacts of the flood on Ramsville and Queenstown, and specifically the African Americans within those two towns, the interviewees indicated differences among areas within the communities. Elderly and low-income residents were hit particularly hard, as were African Americans. And the flooding was worse in areas that were predominantly occupied by African Americans. This was due in part to the fact that the only land that was available for African Americans to settle on following their emancipation from slavery was floodplain land. So in discussions about the flood effects, interviewees specifically mentioned the following. They mentioned high levels of stress, increase in chronic illness, increase in negative health behaviors, cumulatively higher death rates, greater incidence of mental health issues. And the interviewees noted that these effects were significantly worse in people who had poor health status to begin with, so the elderly and those living with one or multiple chronic illnesses. And while fewer than 100 deaths statewide resulted from the hurricane and subsequent flooding, one of the things that we did see in the secondary data was statistically significant increases in mental health service utilization, specifically among Medicaid populations. So the secondary data that we consulted confirmed some of what we were hearing in the interviewees, specifically around mental health utilization and mental health issues. The community strengths. So as Zheng mentioned, one of the main purposes of the action-oriented community diagnosis is to identify the strengths and the challenges of the communities. Since resilience of the towns and community members was identified as a primary strength, we believe that Ramsville and Queenstown residents might capitalize on this strength to address challenges related to disaster preparedness and response as one cohesive community. In the words of one Queenstown service provider, the tradition of Queenstown, of being an incorporated black town, and that was shown in their choice to come back after the flood. There is something intangible about the historical significance of the town, and that seems to be a glue that holds people together. While resilience was noted as strength within the community, one of the challenges that was repeatedly mentioned in the interviews that we conducted was the inherent challenge of living in land that is very susceptible to flooding. As one community member from Ramsville shared with us, the river flooding, it's always at the back of people's minds. If there's another flood, the same thing will happen. How do you start over when everything you had is gone? Moving into recommendations, our team formulated recommendations for the residents of Queenstown and Ramsville based on the secondary data that we reviewed as well as our interviews. We'd like to just underscore that these recommendations are meant to be most applicable to those residents of the two towns. Here we have the socioecological framework, which is it's a theoretical framework that posits that individual behavior is dependent on multiple levels of influence, so influence at the interpersonal, institutional, community, and policy levels. And here we're focusing on affecting personal disaster preparedness, since that was the behavior that the interviewees suggested was most would result in the most improvement in disaster preparedness. That said, it would require supportive change across all levels, which we'll discuss further in our recommendations. Points of intervention. So starting first on the individual level, town governments, county agencies, and community-based organizations and institutions can augment current efforts to keep the public informed and urge preparedness through the facilitation of individualized emergency plans. And one of the things we want to underscore here is the importance of proactive rather than reactive approaches, because in reviewing the disaster preparedness planning in the county, one of the things that we saw was that a lot of the individual level education was basically reliant on individuals requesting to have information presented to them. So we wanted to underscore the importance of pushing the information out wherever possible instead of waiting for people to approach county officials to learn more about the preparedness planning. On the interpersonal and institutional levels, interviewees were consistently expressed that they were reliant on families, social networks, and community-based organizations, and especially churches, to provide emotional support, housing, and food in the aftermath of the flood. So we'd like to focus here on reinforcing and strengthening the capacity to ensure that community members and religious officials are equipped and well-trained to take on leadership roles in disaster preparedness and response. On the community level, we've alluded to the importance of resilience and of both the towns and of the community members. And so to this end, we'd recommend building upon this community-wide belief to ensure that all residents are aware of the available resources and do not feel that accessing these resources would somehow undermine the sense of resilience that they believe is so important and so crucial to their identity. And this, we believe that this will be particularly important in addressing and overcoming the stigma associated with mental health and seeking out those services. Policy. There's some debate about what constitutes policy, and we here are thinking about policy in terms of any strategy that's employed by the town, county, state, or federal government for disaster preparedness, and the slide overviews four of our recommendations at this level. And given the vulnerability of these communities, due primarily to their location and also issues that would compound it, such as age and socioeconomic status, we would like to underscore the importance of identifying these vulnerable populations and making sure that preparedness planning will be available and will address issues that might be specific to these populations. And additionally, just going back to the point about stigma, especially around mental health services, we would just like to underscore the importance of the improvement of health services infrastructure, particularly that for mental health services, not just in the aftermath of the flooding, but in the years following it, since we're hearing still 7 years later that the flood effects very real, very present still in people's minds. So we just wanted to take a moment to just first and foremost to thank the residents and service providers within Ramsville and Queenstown who were incredibly generous with their time and just willingness to share their insights with us. Also our community preceptors, Melvin Muhammad and Taro Knight, and Professor Jeannie Ang and the teaching team who guided our work in the two communities, as well as our professor, Laura Linan, who's the head of our master's program and provided some really helpful insight to us as we prepared for this presentation. We have our references for your review and our contact information if we don't have a chance to address some of your questions today.
Actually, we lack of some secondary data resources for your question. It's pre and after the flood. We search the local health department information, but we can't find locally at the local level. We can't find the data on the health attack, on the heart attack, on the cardiovascular disease death by. Heart attack. But if the health impact list on our slide is from the interviewee's perspective.
So the chances may not be valid.
Yeah. They see their relative, they see their friend died after flood by the heart attack.
I would just add, too, I think that the point here is that the county-level data, mm-hmm. The county-level data on that particular health outcome was not as strong. However, there's a lot of research that was done looking at Eastern Carolina areas that were affected, and so we can certainly follow up with you on specific studies if you're curious specifically about cardiovascular mm-hmm. health and outcomes.
But that makes up with other counties' data. Thank you. This is a really good question. The purpose of an ALCD is to identify the resource, identify the challenger and the strengths throughout the community participatory research process. So we identify the challenger, we identify the strength. How we use the strengths to address the challenges is another challenge. We leave this question to the community themselves because we want to build the community capacities to help them to build their strengths to address their own challenges. Now we know that there's some action steps developed throughout the community forums. Now who will take lead on these action steps and to address those different challenges? It's all ultimately is to rely on the community's capacity to take on and to have the long-term impacts on the community themselves. So we send out a student research team to facilitate this process. But yeah, at the end, they will take on the action steps themselves. And our preceptor is also the leader who is an activist in the communities. So they will pretty much take lead on the process, the follow-up.